Good afternoon. This is the Blind Access Journal podcast. It's Friday, March the 2nd. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We are here at the CSUN 2012 conference. I'm Daryl Chandro.
And I'm Allison Hilliker.
And this is...
Allison Sheridan.
Yes, we have a special guest with us, Allison Sheridan from the NoSilicast podcast. She's also known as Podfeet on Twitter, or her website is podfeet.com. So, Allison, how would you like to start out by just telling us a little bit about your podcast?
Oh, you know, I hate to talk about me. That just kills me. My show is called the NoSilicast Podcast, and my tagline that makes Daryl laugh every time he hears it in person is a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. And the idea is that it's always around geek stuff, but it can be any subject I want. So it's primarily a Macintosh podcast, but I've had Larry Bushy from Going Linux on, and we talk about with Nightwise about all kinds of scary, weird Android things, and pretty much anything geeky is of interest to me. And so I've recently gotten into doing more stuff about accessibility, just because it's fun and interesting, and I'm enjoying the learning about the technologies that are wrapped around accessibility. So I pretty much run the gamut. I even talk about waxing my car from time to time, and Taco Bell Thursday.
Oh yes. Taco Bell Thursday?
I have Taco Bell every single Thursday for the last 15, 20 years.
Wow. So what's your favorite thing from Taco Bell then?
Well, I'm actually kind of depressed. They got rid of the grilled stuffed steak burrito, so I'm having to mix it up right now, and I'm not happy about that, because somebody who goes to the same restaurant every Thursday for 20 years does not want change.
Oh, no.
We're trying to bear up, though.
Aw. Has a new favorite been selected yet? Or
No.
Okay.
We'll keep you posted.
So okay. How did you first start getting interested in Macs and iOS?
Believe it or not, it was my very first computer. It was a 512K Mac in 1984. That was the second Mac. The first one was a 128K Mac. And my husband and I went over to our friend Calvin's house. He had this new crazy fangled thing. He had a computer in his house. And so we went and looked at it and just decided that was something we needed to have. And I checked the prices recently. It was about $3,100 in 1984. And if you add cost of money over the last however many years that is, that would be the equivalent of spending $6,500 right now.
Wow.
But we thought that that was an important thing, and little did we know it was going to change the world, right?
Oh.
But yeah, I was never a Windows user at all. I started using Windows at work about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. So the first Windows I ever used was Vista.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. You could hear the screaming from my office yelling, "People choose this?"
Oh, no.
Not happy times. At least Windows 7 feels like I stopped hitting my head against the wall. I still don't enjoy any time I'm on it, but it's not as bad as it was.
I guess anything's better than banging your head against a wall repeatedly, right?
I guess so.
So how did you, so that's great. So tell us the story about how you got interested in accessibility and all that stuff.
It's all your fault.
Oh.
Actually, I was thinking about it since you asked me to be on the show. My very, very first introduction to the topic actually was reading a book called Follow My Leader by James Garfield when I was around 10 or 11 years old.
Aww.
And it's a story about a little boy who had, his friends were playing with firecrackers and it blew up in his face and he lost
Ooh.
His vision. And it's a fictional story, but it's a story of his anger about the situation and his wanting the whole world to change for him. He thought everybody should put bumpers on everything sharp so he wouldn't get hurt when he walked Aww. Around. And eventually he gets a seeing eye dog called, he named it Sirius after the dog star. And he learns Braille in the book. And one of the things they did was they showed the Braille alphabet in print. And I was intrigued enough by this that I took a piece of cardboard as a little 10-year-old girl and I punched out in a piece of cardboard with an awl and I made myself a little Braille display, I guess you would call it. And I taught myself Braille when I was that young. So I think I've had a bent towards it. But it was reawakened when I went to the Podcast Expo. I think it was number 2, and I met a guy named Daryl Chandro.
It was the first Podcast Expo. It was in 2005.
Okay, yep. I'll take it back. I thought it was the second one. And
nope.
uh, I think you started introducing me to people, and I really do think it might have been all your fault, because I don't think that one of the other funny stories I like to tell is at the first one, Daryl and I met up, and the keynote was about to start, so I said, why don't we go over to the front door and wait, and so there was a crowd, so we sat on the floor. So you're sitting there next to me, and you got your cane and everything, we're talking, and a year later, I was sitting in the exact same spot, except it was Slough sitting next to me with his cane, and a guy came up and said, hey, Allison, how's it going? And I said, oh, hey, how you doing? I said, do you know my friend Slough? And he goes, oh, yeah, yeah, I met him last year. You were sitting right here. I said, no, I just got a whole bunch of blind friends. You never knew who I'm going to be with. So, I don't know, it just seemed to snowball with talking to people and getting to know so many people who are willing to teach me. And like we were saying at lunch today, it was never about, oh, poor, pitiful Daryl's blind. It was, hey, look at this cool tool I have. Look what I can do. Hey, wouldn't it be cooler if? And getting intrigued by those tools and what we could do. And how, I mean, it's fascinating, the tools, the things that you can use and the stuff that's out there. It's just a lot of fun.
Definitely. So tell us about, I remember just walking up to you. You were talking to Matt May, who now works for Adobe. Do you remember Matt May?
No, I sure don't.
Yes, you were talking to him and another couple of guys.
Your memory's frightening, Daryl.
Yeah, I remember, I have uncanny memories about meeting all the people who are important to me.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I remember walking up to you, and I had just gotten into the podcast expo, and I was feeling a little unsure about how this was going to go. And I remember how you just made the difference and made it a great expo.
Oh, I know we went out to dinner that night.
Yeah.
I remember walking in the dark, and we walked and walked and walked and ended up at a horrible restaurant, as I recall.
Marie Callender's.
Was it? But it was bad. For some reason, something was wrong with the food that night.
I don't think it was so good, no.
Yeah. So I'm also been intrigued in those years since my mother has gone blind, and so the interest level stayed high with me because I'm intrigued by what kind of tools can help her life be more fun.
That's great. What's one of the technologically most interesting things you've learned in your process of learning about assistive technology?
I guess the biggest mind opening for me was trying to learn voiceover on the Mac and the iPhone. I expected the iPhone to be difficult. When the iPhone first came out, I'm a real visionary. I say things like, the iPhone will never be accessible because it's a touchscreen. Of course, I also said you never needed a screen bigger than the 512K Mac, and they'll never need color. So, you know, what do I know?
Aww.
Don't ever listen to me. If I make a prediction about the future, bet the other way. So I expected the iPhone to be difficult, and I found it, you know, I had to practice it a lot to get good at typing, for instance. I like to kid around that in my heyday there, when I was practicing it, I was up to 6 words a minute.
Aww.
And you know, I typed 60 words a minute on the computer. But what I was surprised at was how difficult the Mac was to learn. I mean, the tool is there, but it's like learning a whole new language. You know, it's not, and I'm not saying it's harder than JAWS or NVDA or anything like that, because I haven't actually learned any of those, but it's like learning sign language. You have to learn a whole new way of doing everything you knew how to do. Where I'm used to clicking and dragging and double clicking and switching windows with a click, all of a sudden I have to know things like command shift option down arrow to interact with HTML content. Well, that whole going down and back up and down and back up, that whole concept doesn't exist in the sighted world. So it was fascinating learning, and I'm really glad I did it, because it forced me to learn something, you know, setting a goal. I promised I would do it, and so I had to learn how to do it.
So you found, you it turned out, I take it from what you're saying, did it turn out you found out that it was easier to learn voiceover on iOS than on the Mac?
Absolutely. Because your degrees of freedom are so much fewer. You know, you're on a small little iPhone screen. You know, if I go into text messaging, there's only like 3 or 4 things I could do. Hey, we got a nice crowd walking by right now. I hope everybody can still hear us.
Yeah, it's okay. I think it'll go by.
All right.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I mean, like, if if I go to do a text message, there's a field to enter who I'm writing to, there's a field to push send, and there's a field to push typing the text, and that's it. There's only three things. But if you're looking at a web browser, you've got all your menu bars across the top, you got the dock down the bottom, you can accidentally get out of the browser altogether. Now you're on your desktop, you might have icons on the desktop. You've got, you know, there's just so many degrees of freedom. You might not even be in the program you thought you were in when things are happening. And so it's that much more complicated in the degrees of freedom. I didn't get very good at it. I practiced probably 75 hours and I got to where I just kind of sucked at it. I tried really hard, and I'm actually going to do the whole blindfolded demo again for, I didn't tell you this, Daryl, the Mac Computer Expo in October.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
I've been asked to do it there. That's up in Petaluma in October. I forget what the exact dates are, but that should be fun.
Yay.
And I'm doing it again on Mac Mania 15, which is a cruise in Australia where I'm teaching a bunch of classes.
Cruise. Nice. Yeah. Do you need an assistant?
You know, there is actually a line for people to carry my bags on that trip.
There you go.
That has come up.
So you could exemplify this, Allison. Remember when I tried to teach you a little bit about VoiceOver when we were sitting in the Mac store, the Apple store?
Right.
And I got the one of their MacBook Airs out, and I was saying, hey, check this out. Remember how different it was?
It was very different, although I think it would be easier for me to learn it because I've used a screen reader before. I've been a Windows screen reader, JAWS user for more than 10 years. So I think that I'm used to how screen readers basically work and how to navigate computers with them. So I think the learning curve would be a little less than somebody who has not used screen readers before.
Oh, sure.
I get some of the basics of how the Mac works, but it is very different with VoiceOver. And I also find iOS and VoiceOver much easier than using the Mac. So.
Okay. I would love to see them side by side sometime, to sit down with somebody with, I've actually never seen JAWS, or I guess I should say heard JAWS.
Right.
Maybe I've heard it, probably on the Tech Doctor, I probably heard it, but I don't know. I'd like to be able to see with my own eyes what it looks like in comparison, you know, what kinds of activities you do, you know, to interact with elements and things like that. Yeah, so for you, it might be like learning Italian when you already knew Spanish. They're both romance languages.
Right.
But for me, I knew, Arabic. It wasn't even the same alphabet. So I'm starting from scratch.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I also tell people, to me, it's like when they talk to the, you know how they teach sign language to the great apes, right? And so Lucy, I think her name was, she learned for 4 years and she learned 30 signs. I'm like Lucy, you know? I know 30 keystrokes in VoiceOver and the rest of it is a complete and utter mystery to me.
There are quite a few, that's for
sure. And I had a lot of help. Daryl and a lot of the other guys that I know that are blind just were there for me, where I could send emails going, God darn it, son of a kick, get this thing to work, what is going on here? And and gave me tips and tricks and things to turn on and off, and it made a big difference having people to help. And I think about if you were by yourself trying to learn it, You'd kill yourself, or you'd just go, you know, I think I'll listen to the radio instead.
Was the Quick Start tutorial that Apple provides, was that at all helpful, or?
Yeah, it was, up to a point. It's about maybe 15 lessons long,
yeah.
And but the problem is the Quick Start is so slow talking, you want to shoot yourself.
Yeah.
And I understand. Especially because it'll take you in and say, okay, practice this, and then you've got a nice snappy voiceover that says, it's going like this, and blah, 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 you know, it's going really, really fast, and then you go to the next step, it goes, next, we're going to learn, and if you hit the wrong key, it starts over.
Oh,
and
no.
It's just like, oh, kill me now. And so I got about 75% through, and I couldn't figure out what they were trying to tell me to do, and I couldn't get it to advance to the next lesson. All I could get it to do was keep repeating to me over and over and over again what I wasn't understanding, so I gave up on that. And the manual was difficult too, because it wasn't very searchable. It was a bunch of web pages where you had to be in the right web page in order to search for the term, because somebody would tell me, oh, just use the rotor. I don't even know what the rotor is. What are you people even talking about? And I couldn't search for rotor. So I was probably within a week of finishing learning when I found out what the rotor was.
Wow.
So.
So we talked about Blindfolded. Tell us all about what your Blindfolded demonstration is all about.
So my son Kyle suggested that the best way to do the demo, what I had promised was that I was going to use a Mac blindfolded, and I had these grandiose visions of how I was going to demonstrate installing software and all this stuff. And yeah, that didn't happen. But my son suggested that I create like a little script of a typical event you might do. So I started with the iPhone. I blindfolded myself. I started with the iPhone, and I created a text message, and I sent it to Katie Floyd, where I asked her, did she want to go to dinner tonight? Then I said, so that's 15 minutes, right, for me to type that much. So I set that down. It's like watching grass grow, is to, you know, listen to somebody type on that's bad at it. So then I switched over to the Mac, and I launched Safari, and I went to Yelp. I searched for an Italian restaurant in San Francisco. I was able to use the heading tags to navigate down to La Traviata. I was able to copy the address, which was very, very tricky. I couldn't figure out how to do it with keystrokes, and one of the blind guys suggested to me that I use, if you hold down, what is it, Command-Option-Shift-C, it copies the last thing she said out loud.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. So that's tricky, though, because you got to do it quick, or she starts yapping about something else. So I get it. She says the name of the restaurant. I copied that, then flip over to iCal, and in iCal, you can create an event with natural language. So all I typed in was dinner with Katie tomorrow at 7, and it created the calendar event at 7 o'clock on the following day. But then I interacted with that and changed the length of time. I changed, I inserted the name of the restaurant and pasted in the address, and then entered her email address and sent an email to her with it. So that took about 45 minutes, because for 6 minutes in the middle, I was completely dead in the water. I couldn't.
Oh, no.
Somehow, at the last minute, I got the great idea that it would be easier to get to my presentation if I left it on the desktop. So I did a presentation at the beginning where I talked about why I was doing this and what the learning process was. And somehow, I got that thing stuck to my cursor, and I couldn't get it off. It was like I had some gum on the bottom of my shoe, and I was stuck walking around in a circle, and I couldn't recover. And I was disappointed by that, but the audience said that it really did a good job of illustrating the kind of frustrations you can run into when you do get stuck and you're not sighted and you have to depend on someone else to help. So while I was disappointed that I didn't have flawless execution, they said that it was really, really a good learning thing.
I was listening to you, you know, talk about the sort of results of the blindfolded demonstration and the audience feedback. And you had said on your show something about, oh, the audience really came to understand how difficult it is to use VoiceOver.
Which wasn't what I wanted to teach.
Right.
I wanted to teach that you could use VoiceOver, that these tools are available, that your life's not over because you can't see.
Right.
But they got another message, do you think? Or
yeah,
are you concerned about that?
It's really hard. Well, it is what it is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was reality. It was really hard to do.
Right.
I still don't know how it happened. I can't even reproduce what happened.
Gotcha.
So, what were you going to say, Alice?
I always say I often encounter issues like that, and then I try to explain it to somebody, and I'll say, they'll be like, so what happened? I'll be like, it didn't work. That's what happened.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's hard to explain what went wrong when you don't even know what went wrong.
Yeah, I can tell you the symptoms, but I still don't know why it happened.
Right.
I ended up stuck in Quick Look was where I was tangled.
Ouch.
But anyway, yeah.
So do you find that you look at websites and apps differently now? Do you ever find yourself thinking about how is this accessible or would this be accessible? Do you find that has an impact?
Yeah, probably more on iOS, because people often ask me, is an app accessible after I review it? If they're interested, they ask me if it's accessible so they don't have to buy it to find out. And I was always frustrated by that question, because my answer was, well, how do I know?
Right.
But now I can turn it on and, you know, dink around a little bit and see what it does. And in fact, during Blindfolded, I talked about a Mac news aggregator called MacHash that runs on iOS. It's this cool little app that aggregates all of the top Mac news sites, so you can read all the articles of what's going on. And I turned on VoiceOver just on a lark to see what it did, and it was accessible. There's one button that didn't seem to quite work right, and I wrote to the developer, and I asked him, I said, I told him, I said, hey, good job making this accessible. And he wrote back, and he said, it's accessible? And what he told me was, all I did was follow the guidelines. So you don't have to do extra work. Just follow the guidelines. Just do what Apple tells you to do, and it's going to be accessible. So I think about that. Also, when I was having a little trouble with Yelp, I was getting a little confused. So my son said, "Well, why don't you just try Urban Spoon instead?"
Oh, yay! Yeah, Urban Spoon's kind of interesting.
Urban Spoon is horrific. It is impossible to move around that site. After you search Italian restaurant San Francisco, you have to go past about 40
That's
links
true.
That are all the different districts in San Francisco before
right.
you can get to the first name of a restaurant. There is one heading on the whole page.
But what about the app?
Oh, I haven't used the app. This was the website.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because
there's an Urban Spoon app, and there's a mode where you can basically, if you're looking for a restaurant, you can shake your phone and it'll come up with one near you.
Oh, I do have that. Yes. And I love that. Is it accessible?
Yes.
Okay.
It's pretty accessible.
So they had somebody different work on that than on the website.
Yeah, apparently.
But, yes, what I think about, Allison, one of the things I think about is how to get the message out of how easy it is to make your site accessible. And only because somebody told me, I had every section of my 5,000 word blog post a week was bold. And somebody said, if you made it a heading tag, we could jump around and read what we wanted to read.
Yay.
And I said, what's a heading tag? Yeah, I just didn't know. And it is just as easy for me to make it a heading tag as it is to make it bold, but I just didn't know. So one of the things I've tried to do, like at the Podcast Expo last year, Blog World Expo, I should say, I did a pitch called how to increase your audience size through accessibility.
Oh, nice.
So I tried to appeal to what do people want. Everybody wants a bigger audience. So I explained to them, at the time there were about 650 million visually impaired and hearing impaired people in the world. And my point was, if your site's not accessible, you're keeping out almost as many people as are in Facebook.
That's a great point.
I'm glad
you throw that out there. That's
wonderful. It was a good metric, right? When you go, oh my God, I'm skipping everybody who's in Facebook. I don't want to do that. What do I have to do? So... And in there, I mean, I just gave these real simple things. I'm not sure it always sinks in, though. Like, somebody else told me that when you embed a YouTube video on your blog, it's not accessible. The play button simply isn't there. But if you put a link to YouTube and the person goes to YouTube, the button is accessible. I'm not quite sure why the embed link doesn't work. So now all I do is I even have a text expander snippet that says, using a screen reader, click here. And then I make the click here, the link over to the video.
Awesome.
And I've showed that to my friends, and then I look at my friends' sites and they're not doing it. And they've even asked me about it. Oh, how do you do that again? And I tell them and they still don't do it. So, I don't know. It's so easy to do it where it is accessible, at least the parts I know so far. I'm sure there's some glaring thing I'm still missing. But that's something I think about.
Terrific. Wow.
There's a number of other ways to present YouTube videos. I have something called WP YouTube Lite, which includes some accessibility. Yes, it is. A WordPress extension.
Oh, you got to tell me about that.
Yeah.
All right, shoot me that later, because I want to check that out.
Just because I'm curious, what's your favorite iOS app?
I gotta pull out my iPhone and think about that. That's my favorite iOS app. Well, the ones I flip between, the first thing I do when I open my phone is mail.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is Twitter.
Right.
I'm not really much of a Facebook user.
Yeah, I'm more of a Twitter user myself, so I understand.
Yeah, I'm testing out Tweetlist right now.
Tweetlist.
Because my friend Summer H, I don't know if you've been seeing her, she's so fun. She's a blind Linux user who uses Lynx.
Wow.
So she's a text-only browser user, and that's just crazy stuff. So I'm trying to look. I use my camera a lot. I text. I use photos. It sounds like I use pretty much the standard stuff.
Right.
I'm trying to think. I don't use any of those.
Use Downcast, right?
Not on my iPhone.
Oh, not on your iPhone.
So my favorite app on my iPad is probably is Downcast. So I use it to watch video podcasts in the morning.
Just on the iPad.
But
okay.
On the iPad, I don't use my iPhone for podcasts at
all.
Hey, Tel.
Yay, Haytel.
Gotta love Haytel.
Yes.
I really enjoy Haytel for sending, it's a walkie-talkie, basically, right? That's how Daryl and I met up today.
We have it, too.
I just got rid of 150 applications on my iPhone and iPad.
Oh, wow.
I got rid of 150.
Wow.
And I'm looking around going, no, stocks, weather, I web browse. Yeah, I'm using all the stuff Apple submits to me, and the other 150, I don't know what I'm doing with them.
Wow.
It's kind of funny.
And she does not use Foursquare.
I hate Foursquare. I do not want to see it. In fact, one of the reasons I got Tweetbot on the iPad is because you can mute specific posts. The first thing I muted was Foursquare. I don't care where you're sitting right now. It does not interest me at all. It must be very fun for the people who do it, but it isn't to me.
I kind of agree with you. I tend not to tweet my check-ins because I like to not annoy my followers. So I kind of agree with you, but I still think Foursquare is fun in and of itself. I just don't think it's fun when people tweet it all the time.
Yeah. It's just the Foursquare part, not the tweeting of your Foursquare, that's fun.
Right. And even I've significantly reduced the amount of Foursquare I tweet, unless it's something important or I'm typing something. I have something to say about it.
That was fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure everyone needed to know that one, so that stands out, right?
There you go.
There you go.
I also am not, as a woman on the internet, not that interested in telling everyone where I am.
Right. That makes sense.
It's not in the list of things I'm doing.
Really good point.
But there's a cool thing where you can compete with your friends and get points and mayorships and stuff like that. And you can do that without tweeting your Foursquare.
Yeah, but I'd end up the mayor of Taco Bell.
There you go. Yes. You would be the mayor of Taco Bell, yes.
Actually, I wonder if I could. I might do it and only do Foursquare at Taco Bell and see. I mean, I go every week.
There you go.
Eventually.
There you go.
It's fun. Especially if you're competitive at all. It's kind of fun. It's like, yes, I'm the mayor. And then somebody else takes the mayorship and you're like, I got to get that back. But do not let them take my mayorship. It's mine. That's how I get anyway.
Isn't it funny how, I was talking to Daryl about that, the gamification of things that causes you to just get so happy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm mayor of Dunkin' Donuts. You know? Why is it we love that, but we just do? For the visual, I mean, we get like little badges, you know?
Yeah.
At work, we have a blogging system that after you get 5-star or 5-pluses, you get a little 5-pointed star, and when you get to 10, it's a 6-pointed star.
Whoa, you keep
going up. I got one blog post, it got like a medal that had colored stripes and a star on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was really, really pleased about that.
You know?
It's the competitiveness,
kinda like that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So any other burning questions about me?
What? I think that, I really appreciate your coming on the show. Do you have any, final things you'd like to say to our listeners?
Well, of course, I got to, plug everything about my show.
There you go.
It's called the NoSillaCast podcast, and it's on iTunes. It's at podfeet.com. My husband says I have feet like pods. That's again, there's no meaning to any of this. And you can follow me on Twitter at podfeet.
There you go.
It's really nice to see you again, Daryl. 6 years. We don't want it to go that long next time.
No, absolutely not.
And thank you so much for talking with us. It's really been interesting and enjoyable, so I'm really glad that you came here today and chatted with us.
Nice to meet you too, Allison.
Yeah.
This is fun. I knew I'd like you anyway because your name.
Right. It's a great name.
And because all the things that I say about Allison.
Well, in both directions, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, well, I think that's a wrap for the show, everybody. I hope you all got to enjoy meeting Allison Sheridan from the NoSillaCast podcast at podfeet.com. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.